Okay, I'd like to call to order the Taney County Commission meeting, January 11th, 2016, at 9:06 a.m. Let's see, we have someone that signed up for public comment. Come on up.
Morning, gentlemen. Just wanted to let you know where the assessor's office is mailing the assessment list out this morning. 29,554 of them. And I'm going to pass a little press release on to the media here in just a little bit. But just wanted to let you know those are going out today.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Oh, one other thing. Folks will be able to file online this year. There'll be a PIN number right underneath their name and address. So
okay.
Those that like to do stuff online, that will be available.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commission remarks. Monthly update. I don't know.
Is that from Melanie or is that from you, Rick? Or?
Don't have
food.
I would be glad to give you a monthly budget if you like that. I don't know what it was.
Is it in your paperwork there, Mr. Schofield?
I don't have anything in it.
I don't, so.
I believe it read something on the email different than that.
Yeah, let's look.
I think it was budget or monthly budget report or some update or something like that. Let's look and see what it says.
Just says monthly update on the email. Go ahead, Rick. You can update us on the...
Yeah. I don't think I gave you a budget report for the end of the year, and so this would be a good time to do that anyway. I don't know. But, we did end up spending a little bit more out of general county revenue than what we brought in last year. Not a whole lot more and a lot less than what we had projected as a budget, which is normal. We normally project to be able to spend an emergency fund and contingency fund and things like that, and most of those things were not spent this year. So we ended the year, I think we ended up spending about $150,000 more than what we brought in. Hopefully that will turn around, and next year we'll end up spending less we bring in, whatever. But there were several departments that did spend more than what they were budgeted based upon things that you guys approved for them. And so we had some, I wouldn't call them major expenditures, but we had some expenditures in there that were probably a little more than what we maybe had expected before we started the year. But overall, it's a good year. Most of the other funds were up. Road and Bridge Fund is up a lot. I think Randy and I talked, and I believe we're going to try to do some more capital improvements beginning this next year. So we're looking at those things and trying to look at that. So, you guys have any questions? Well, that was good and easy. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Accounts payable.
Move to approve checks numbers 346783 through 346806, warrant 6405 through 6407, and checks numbers 346808 through 346831 and warrant 6408.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Approval of payroll.
Motion for approval of payroll.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Approval of previous minutes for December 28, 2015 and January 4, 2016. January 6, 2016 and executive minutes for January 4, 2016. Also, we want to correct some typos within the regular session minutes for August 24th, 2015 and September 14th, 2015.
So move that motion.
With that verbiage, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Flood update.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hey, I got a handout there, so maybe it makes some sense for you to talk about. Just to bring you somewhat up to date what's going on with the flooding, obviously the water has receded. Now it's mostly, we're in the cleanup of everything. There is some confusion because the president issued an emergency declaration to the state of Missouri. And there is some question of this applies to us, and it really does not. What so far has happened applies to the state of Missouri, not to the locals. And that just opens up some federal resources for the state. If you can, as you can see there on some of these other pages, it talks a little bit about the difference between public assistance and individual assistance. Because it's what we've done some preliminary damage assessment and submitted that to the state. From that, they feel like that we will qualify for it, but we have to meet a threshold, and the state has to meet a threshold. We will meet that threshold, looks like, without any question, and the state should meet it also because there's just it's just such a widespread disaster going all the way up, from really from southwest Missouri all the way up to St. Louis. So many counties affected that that should happen. So We're working in the process of going through those steps right now. We're doing sometime this week individual assistance, the assessment for that, which means some of the folks from FEMA will be down here and we'll drive around and show them those locations. This is really not an opportunity for people to meet with them. They just want to see where the damages are and how widespread they are. They want to see them, I guess, firsthand so we just don't make this stuff up. But they have so many counties to do, so they're trying to really get it done quickly. So I doubt that we make very many stops. It'd be just mostly driving around relatively quickly. As of right now, we're scheduled for Monday, and all of that's a holiday, to do the public assistance preliminary damage assessment. And we're just trying to get everything together from everybody. So again, we can take them around for public assistance and show those things too. As you see on page 3, public assistance really breaks down the 7 different categories: debris removal, emergency protective measures, road and bridges, water control facilities, buildings, equipment, utilities, and parks and recreational facilities. So we're going to go through those. Debris removal, that's the dumpsters that we've been placing out there, potentially will fall in that. And so we will point that out to them. Emergency protective measures, is anything under that could qualify anything that putting barricades up, having extra patrol out there, maybe having law enforcement on overtime, doing rescues on people. Those are all emergency protective measures. Road and bridges, obviously damages to road and bridges, which I talked to Randy, and he's like, yeah, they really, we did very well on that, not too many. Water control facilities, buildings and equipment that is county or city-owned utilities, that's county or city-owned utilities, and then parks and recreation. So anyway, we're working on all those items and going through them. Couple things. This is public assistance. And the individual assistance is on the last page. We will work through that also, obviously. Couple things on the broad picture for people to understand, particularly on the individual assistance. Individual assistance from FEMA, I'm no FEMA rep, but I've just done this. This is our ninth disaster since I've been here. It is not like insurance. It is not supposed to that you had damage and when you're done, you're as good as before to make you whole kind of thing. It's not intended for that. It is intended to help you survive. It is intended for individuals. If you have a house that was flooded and you get some money, one of the requirements is that you're going to carry on flood insurance from now on, which really means most of these places that have flooded, that flooded in 11, they should have had flood insurance. So I do not know what that will mean. They should have had flood insurance. And so they should really not have a claim. But that's what it should be. So I don't know what that means. The other thing is for...
Yeah. I'm a little confused about that. Are you talking about the ones that would receive the money had substantial damage and the others that didn't have substantial damage, was they left out of the payment last time? Is that a qualification factor?
No. Really what I'm talking about is anybody that got assistance last time, got money from FEMA last time for flooding, they are required to carry flood insurance.
Do you know what I'm asking, Brandon? The only people that got assistance last time were the people that were substantially damaged, right?
Bob, come on up over. Come on up here and have a seat too.
Mr. Schofield actually asked me if I could update the county commission. I didn't want to. I was going to wait until your presentation was complete.
Well, I mean, I'm not in. There's a couple of questions I've got, yes. And that was one of them. And I thought it, before we get all the way through it, I would bring that up to you. Last time, because it's such a lengthy process, and we just got through finishing up.
Yes.
On the other one, the substantial damage that was for 9 or 10 properties were they the only ones that were paid where we did the destruction of the homes and move out?
I think you're talking about two different things,
yes,
are we not?
It's kind of two different things because hopefully, and what we found is that the majority of the people last time in 2011 did have flood insurance. The cap for flood insurance is $250,000, and so people did receive flood insurance payments. You're also correct, though. The planning department, as the floodplain administrator, we had to do a damage assessment on each individual property. To determine whether or not the property had been substantially damaged using FEMA's terminology. We actually are having to do that same thing again with this flooding event.
But that's different than what...
But it's really different than what...
Mr. Burns talking about.
Yeah, what I'm not talking about is the buyout and the houses that ended up being gone.
Right.
That's not what I'm talking about.
Correct.
Although, you know, I want to throw a little note on there in that. For response-wise, that those 9 houses were gone really helped. I felt like it made a positive impact. And I know Hollister did all of Holland Park, and which I know this is Hollister, it's not you guys, but that also made a huge difference, that it was gone. There was just a field there. There's no rescues to be made. There's nobody that floods. It's not obstructing the flow of the water. It has made a big difference. And... So anyway, there's two individual people, some people got money for whatever damages they had. And then the buyout, I think what you're talking about is substantial damage. That's really two different things. And I don't know, that's one thing I'm trying to figure out. If somebody was offered a buyout last time, and was there anybody that declined it, that did not want to do it?
Well,
one.
I believe one.
I think there was.
So I don't know if they will offer it to that person again, or if that's a one-time deal. I don't know.
Well, but I think they showed that the value was, then it goes by substantial damage and value and everything else. So if there's less than 50% of the value, well, this time the water got up even higher on that specific residence. So now, I don't know, but if it were to happen, I can't imagine them being turned down, I guess is what I'm getting at. Because the 50% damage is higher than 50% now, as before it wasn't.
And ultimately, this is the difficult thing. Basically, if there is a presidential disaster declaration, the county becomes eligible for these hazard mitigation grant program funds. And at that point, the county commission then has to make the determination as to whether or not we would potentially apply for another grant, for another buyout. So the decision is left with the local community.
But the funds still come from the federal.
But the funds come from the federal government.
But don't they mandate, if it's over 50%, that it has to be tore out?
And that's the thing that's difficult.
So how is it a local government, how is it our decision whenever they say you can't rebuild anyways?
I don't disagree on that. And that's one of the things that's difficult at this point. So far we're collecting, the planning department office is collecting data. We've visited 52 sites at this point. Unfortunately, we feel that there's a high likelihood that a number of these properties are going to be considered substantially damaged. Just to give an example, we've got a one-story log cabin house that had almost 8 feet of water in it. And so the water pretty much made it to the rooftop. And so I know there's definitely going to be a certain percentage of these that are going to come out substantially damaged. And so...
Do they, when you say substantially damaged, do they have to, according to FEMA, do they have to be raised up and or tore down, one or the other?
Yes, exactly. Okay. The way this actually works, the county adopted a floodplain management ordinance in 2004. Prior to 2004, there were no regulations regarding the floodplain.
And but the other big thing was people could not, even if they wanted to, they could not get flood insurance.
Correct.
It was not
correct.
Possible.
So in 2004, with the adoption of this floodplain management ordinance, for the first time, the citizens of Taney County became eligible for FEMA flood insurance. But because you've got a number of structures that were constructed prior to 2004, prior to the adoption of this floodplain management ordinance, FEMA looks upon those as what they call pre-farm houses, which just means that those houses were constructed prior to the county adopting a flood insurance rate map, which those houses are fine, but anytime one of those houses is damaged, whether by flood, tornado, fire, if the damages exceed 50% of the market value, they're supposed to bring that structure into compliance with the regulations. And so, unfortunately, you're exactly correct. They're supposed to either elevate the structure or remove it from the floodplain. Well, the only way really feasibly to remove it from the floodplain is to tear it down. And so the county's, unfortunately, in kind of a bad situation where potentially we're going to have a certain number of people that we have to tell them either to elevate their structure or tear it down. Now, I think in the coming weeks we'll likely receive a presidential disaster declaration, and that would make the county eligible for another flood buyout. I
Bob, have you went out and looked at any of these homes? Do you know how many approximately would come under this?
Well, of the 52, the flood depths have varied from probably the least we've seen is about 14, 16 inches of water. The most we've seen is about 8 feet. So, I mean, some of these have had... the structures vary quite a bit, too. We've got some, of course, that are single-story structures, some that are three-story structures. We've got one three-story house, for example, that the entire first floor was underwater. About half of the second floor was underwater.
So approximately how many homes do you think are 50% or more? Do you have any idea?
I don't have an estimate yet. The way we have to do this is FEMA's provided us with a computer program. We're supposed to come up with an approximate value for each one of these structures. There's actually a place where you plug in the water depth, and it actually calculates a percentage at the end of this thing. It asks for like the materials that each of these houses were constructed with, you know, whether it was a wood frame house, a brick or masonry house. And then the way this was approached last time, and I really hoped to take the same approach, is we sent out an initial letter to all of the property owners first, either telling them that our initial calculations indicate that they are substantially damaged, and what that means, that they would have to either elevate the house or remove it, or that they were not substantially damaged and that they can immediately build back. Along with that, though, we also told them that if they felt that we were incorrect, that they could provide us additional documentation. And what we really asked for last time was an appraisal and some contractor's estimates, basically, to show that, to provide us with more detailed information, because in some cases it came out very close. If somebody's 49% damaged, they're not considered substantial. If they're 50% damaged, they are. And so some of these come out very, very close.
Well, the house we were talking about earlier fell under that scenario, and then that's whenever they said, no, our house was worth more. So then the 50% damage wasn't there, so that's how they were able to rebuild.
I think literally in his instance, he probably came out like 48% damaged. So he came out very, very close.
But he wanted to rebuild.
And he wanted to rebuild. And now the floodwaters were a couple feet deeper. And so he basically will come out substantial this time.
The other thing to remember with the buyout, I know, Danny, you alluded to that, this is a long, drawn-out process. This is not something that happens today or tomorrow. I mean, as you alluded, we had just about to finish up from 11, so it took about 4 years to finish that project. So this is not something that's going to go real quick.
I think that's what we were told initially, that it was a four-year average process to get these people paid fully.
That long for us here.
Yeah.
Now, they were able to get... the finances a lot quicker than that. It just took us that much time to get everything wrapped up all the monies to be transferred through.
They received the funds after about 3 years, and then it took us another year just to wrap up the demolition.
Our matching funds with the
CDBG.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's only a 75% that you get from the feds, so either state or the county pays for it, or the owner pays for it. I mean, that's really up to you guys, or what you did trying to go through a grant trying to do that.
Yeah, last time we received state funds, community
through the community development block grant, right?
Yes.
And the CDBG.
We don't know at this point. Of course, we haven't received that presidential disaster declaration yet, and so we don't know too much more than that at this point.
But you foresee that happening?
I really do, don't you? I mean,
I would say there's a high possibility. And I would hope next couple weeks that we would know something on that. And we also, on the top of the front page there, it talks about we had 169 buildings that were somewhat affected. And this could be very minor and two completely flooded. And that includes businesses too. Oh, and that's the other thing I wanted to point out. For businesses, you know, an individual may, if this all comes through, will receive maybe some money from FEMA, but a business will not. A business, all they would get would be a low-interest loan. It is really the only intent is trying to help them to make it through this. And my last thing that I have is just, you know, this is January, and the lakes are full, and I'm just, I got to tell you, I'm really worried. We're encouraging all these people to repairs, and they're working on doing repairs, and who knows with the spring rain. I mean, I know they're trying to, you know, there's flooding on the White River at the very far end at Newport, and this is finally going down, so they're starting to release a little more water out of both shoals, but the lakes are pretty full. And if we get some substantial rain this spring, I could foresee we're in much worse shape than we have been.
I did want to throw out one other thing, too, and not to be negative, but we've each house we've visited, we've put a notice up on the house. A lot of these folks, rightly so, have gone in really quickly. They've pulled out the sheetrock. They've pulled out the insulation. And we've really asked that people wait to rebuild until they receive this letter from us, indicating that they're not substantially damaged. I've on this notice, I've asked people to call me, and of course I've received a multitude of calls within the last week, and we're really trying to get the word out that we don't want to delay anybody in any way. We're going to try to get these letters out as quickly as possible. We're going to send those out starting this week. But we also don't want somebody to build back and discover that they're substantially damaged and they have to elevate or tear down. And then we're really going to have a terrible situation.
Yeah.
I see you didn't have anything. Did the Sewer District have any claims on theirs?
I believe so.
I think there was I don't know the numbers of lift stations, but there was one lift station right there where we had to close the road on Acacia Club. Mm-hmm. They were in there with a crane pulling some stuff out.
Right.
When I was standing there talking with them, I want to say they said something like the engineers or whatever said, oh, this will it'll be safe here. They had to jerk it, and I think the generator got underwater. And so.
But on a good note on that, you know, after 11, they moved that one at Dale Avenue.
Down there at Dale, yeah, and yeah. Dale, and that was
you know, that was a huge battle on 11 trying to save that one. I mean, mm-hmm. Spent a lot of time and energy trying to save that one, and it was raised and wasn't even an issue.
Yeah, it was well within the...
I'm well aware of all that. I just wanted to bring the attention to it for this, what you've got on here.
Yes.
The other thing that...
Sure, don't ask us a question for him, say it.
I'm just trying to inform the public of what he's got here. And then another thing is I personally called Rockaway Beach about putting dumpsters out down there. And I know you've got Highway 176. Is that covering that area? Or are you talking about, did they request any? I personally called the clerk and told her they were available. I've seen a lot of stuff on TV. I didn't see any dumpsters.
Okay, we did not, because we only did the county. We didn't do any in Hollister. We didn't do any in Branson. We didn't do any in any city. We just did the county.
When you state Highway 176, are you talking about that road that goes through down there where there were dumpsters available?
That is correct.
Okay.
Outside of the city limits, east of Rockaway Beach, those houses, they got flooded along there.
Okay. That's another thing I'm aware of. I just wanted to make it a part of the record.
Question? I came in late, maybe I missed it. Who determines whether it's substantially
FEMA?
Well,
the calculation provided by FEMA.
And basically, it's a responsibility that's put on the local floodplain administrator. And so the floodplain ordinance spells out that the planning administrator is the local floodplain administrator. Now, I know that FEMA can come in and review our records, and likely will, as far as the methodology we used. And they've provided us with a computer disk, a computer program, to use to come up with those calculations. But we do struggle, in all sincerity, coming up with a realistic value a lot of times.
And Bob, you're the floodplain administrator, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the scary thing about that to me is it sounds like the FEMA has put us in the position of being the leasing agency for their...
They really have.
I'm sure you guys don't, but that's a concern to me.
Well, that's what I said earlier, and Bob said he didn't disagree with it. The same point, you know. It says it's local. Government can make the decision, but they're the ones that are saying the 50% and what they have to do with it after that. So.
Yes, but it does. It's a difficult position.
You know, I don't want to stand up for FEMA by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think they really do want to make sure that the locals have some say-so. And, I mean, I know, I understand what you're saying. It kind of, we want, because I was here in 2004, and the big thing was, after some flooding, people wanted, they said, we can't even get flood insurance.
So why can't we go back? That's what they want to know.
Right.
But,
well,
know,
but there's some other things
in
2000.
If it's going to flood over and over and over again, it just doesn't, at some point, it just doesn't make sense to have a building there.
But I understand their finances are paying because they got no insurance involved in it. I've had a local contact me about this. Hey, it's my land. Why can't I go back there? They know they can't get insurance. And that's a hard question to answer.
Well, actually, I can answer that because I can tell you, even if they say, well, I don't want insurance, I don't want nothing, when they come flooded, they want money. Because I've seen that firsthand many, many times.
No, but not everybody.
Maybe not everybody, but I see that over and over. That people, they say maybe, okay, I don't want to get insurance out, I want to build right there. But once they flood, they will ask for help. I mean, I've seen that over and over. They do want help. And I think that's just the idea that...
I'm sure there's a high percentage, but again, it's not everybody.
No, it's not everybody, but it's...
It's a misconception. They think because the county has FEMA insurance that everybody gets paid for everything. That's the reason I asked the question earlier about the number of people that got paid, because not everybody gets paid.
I was told to listen, I was talking about this, and she told me a lot of these that her name is just not a second home, the thing will cover second home. Is what she said. I don't know if that's true or not true. If that's the case, that eliminates a lot of our problems. But those second homes are not covered.
And that is true. In the last flood buyout, all of the property owners basically had to attest that this was their primary residence. And so there will be some of these. I know there's one instance, for example, where there's a property owner that owns two houses on Foggy River Road, and so there's no way that they can attest that both of those were their primary residence because they have two of them.
That same thing happened last time, and the guy got paid for one and didn't get paid for the other. Like I said, this whole thing with the idea that when they talk about FEMA insurance, it's a misconception that everybody's going to get the dollars, and it doesn't work like that at all. As a matter of fact, when you talk about the locals having it on their backs to go after the grants and to hire the people and do all the things that the county does, then those things are the terminology whenever they want to put it on the locals. There's a lot more to it than just saying we had FEMA insurance and we're going to get paid.
Anything else?
Sorry that I interrupted you on your presentation, but I think that we got to the point to where we were getting so much information that we needed to get some things clarified.
Perfectly fine.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming in and starting the process. As a matter of fact, as this proceeds along, I think we probably will agendize this same topic, maybe, you know, not next week, but the following week, where you have a little more time to see where you're at. But we'll keep the public involved and informed.
And you said, Chris, next Monday you'll be going around with, or the FEMA will be here, and
that's the plan for public assistance.
Public,
gotcha. And hopefully doing either Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, individual assistance going around.
Chris, do you assist Hollister, Rockaway, Branson in their FEMA proposals? I know they hired the hire that was hired last time to take care of it was the same person for Branson as it was for the county. Do you assist those, like, for Rockaway to...
They have all their own emergency managers, so they do their own thing, per se, but we help them coordinate and we help them make sure that they, like, when we go around looking at all the damage, we take them around to all of them.
So yeah, that's
when we
all.
Get to Rockaway, we meet with somebody from Rockaway and they show us around. When we get to Branson, we do the same, Hollister, Bull Creek, you know, we help them coordinate, and but we meet with them, with the local people there. To show them what their damage is.
Okay. Alrighty.
Is there any organizations still out there that you guys can talk about as far as providing some assistance locally? Food pantry type kind of things?
Yeah, we have some.
Clothing, books, toys.
We have some volunteer groups out there, and they're helping different people. Really, the two main hot spots seem to be Rockaway Beach and... the yacht club in Hollister, where a lot of people, and the Red Cross is helping, the Catholic Charities, I believe it's what it's called, they're very active for some reason this go around, and
didn't Church of Christ do something?
Huh?
Did I read something about Church of Christ was doing something?
Church of Christ, that's right, it's a church out on West 76. They are handing out supplies. They have quite a few supplies, and they're handing them out to people that need them, anything from diapers to cleanup supplies to things like that. So there is different organizations out there still, and we just try to help coordinate the people what they need.
Let people know where they can go.
Where they need to go and where they can get resources, yes.
And there was nobody injured, nobody hurt during this entire...
As far as I know, that is correct.
Right. And there was quite a few rescues.
23 people, yes.
That's what I was thinking. And when there's barricades, you know, you always hear the turn around, don't drown. I'm still amazed at how many people drive around barricades and then have to get rescued. It just doesn't make any sense.
I do have an 800 number also for people that want to contact the National Flood Insurance Program. And I apologize, I've laid it over here and didn't grab it. But that's... they set up a support call center, and that number is 1-800-621-3362 if somebody has insurance questions.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
I got one other question that I think that could apply with Randy's situation. He's going to give us a road and bridge update. But, Chris, this does involve you and your drive around next Monday, where we have flooded roads that are, if they're underneath the water, we're fine. If they get down to the part to where the water freezes on top of it, or if it's bare, just as the pavement gets covered, we'll have all that pavement pop up just like it has in the city of Springfield and like it has in Christian County, and we need to be able to
document it
and make sure that it's aware. I can think of the road along the bluff down here, which was supposed to be a 100-year, some of the roads we have are 500-year floodplain where they've been 3 years, they've been underwater. So those kind of things, whenever you're driving those people around, even though we don't have any damage right now, whenever it could be there is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and that's what we do with any road that's underwater. We make them aware of it, and they know that nobody knows what the damage is going to be. It could be minor, it could be gone.
Yeah. It's better off if it's underwater than it is if it's just barely showing where it freezes and thaws.
Yeah, this is really going to be a little bit of different flooding event, because normally they happen in the spring and summer when it's warm. Yeah. This is the first one now that's happening in this cold weather.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Vote tabulation systems contract.
Gentlemen, could we put that off until next week? I'm still working with the Secretary of State's office on getting that grant money, and that has to be in place before we actually make the purchase.
Is that the 18th? What's next Monday?
Are we off on next Monday?
Yes.
Yeah, we're off.
Can we do Tuesday or whatever day you're going to meet next?
19th and 20th, I'll be out of town to the for the MAC board or whatever it is. But when are we meeting? I just want a table to
next available meeting. Until I receive the documents from the state, then I can put it back on the agenda.
That'll be fine, because you don't know that you'll get it by the next week, so
right.
We'll just wait.
Okay. Hopefully, but there's no way I can guarantee it.
All right.
So do you want a motion, or you just want to skip over it?
We'll just let her reschedule.
Okay.
Okay, next on the agenda, University of Missouri Extension update.
There will be no update from a phone call we received this morning.
Okay. Road and bridge updates. Thank you.
If you need something, you have to get a hold of us, don't you?
Morning, gentlemen. Kind of an updated list. We opened two more roads this morning, Happy Hollow area and the Clevenger Cove area off the end of P Highway. Water is now receded down off of those roads, and so they're open. We currently have four roads closed due to bull shoals, and all of them are on bull shoals: Barker Hole, Slough Hollow, Forsyth, Taneyville, and Devil's Teeth Table Road. And of course, the park down there, Kazee Mills Park, is also under. So we'll monitor them as the lake elevations changes. We've got them all documented, so we know what roads at what elevation will go under, so what's next, and we prepare for that ahead of time. So, yeah. Some projects we're currently working on, with the recent weather, we're going to try to get started next couple of days on animal control sewer line again. We're moving equipment up to Nolan Road to dig out those rough areas right there and make that one a little more passable for the winter. They're also working when weather permits on Eagle Ridge. And then doing our ditch cleaning with the flooding, we've got numerous horns that they're cleaning out and road sweeping and grading. The vehicles we had on Purple Wave, we have two that have not sold yet. They will sell this Wednesday. But the current ones we sold brought in $62,600. With two of the Ford 550s yet to sell Wednesday. Sheriff's vehicles brought in $19,690 that he had on there.
How many do you have on there, Jim?
I believe Jimmy had five.
Now, are those the ones that had like 180 or 200,000 miles? I mean, they were the high mileage.
Yeah, ones. They had the Chargers and I think one Dakota pickup that he had on there. We had five 550s that we currently have on there in one dump truck. There's two roads I want to bring up and talk about. The first one being Castle Rock. This road was taken in originally, I believe, in 2005. The first two-tenths of the road was taken in the first time, and then they've taken in the rest of Castle Rock, I believe, at a later date. The area just beyond the T in that sharp 90-degree corner where the road turns west, that area is kind of a low area, and that's the area that flooded. It's flooded for the fourth time that I'm aware of it since we've taken it in. And the water will get average of up to 2 feet, maybe a little over. I think one time it got a little higher than that. It's an area of about 300 feet in length, that a section of road that floods and makes it difficult for those residents beyond there to get out. It's an area that we've got some utilities. There is an underground electric right there. There's a utility box that needs to be raised if any fuel is even put in there. And with the current right-of-way of the road and the fences where they're at, to put enough fuel in there to take it out of that amount of water gets over it, we'll probably have to have some additional right-of-way to have room for the fill to go in, if that's a possibility.
I know I talked to a couple of the residents, and I went and drove that road. I was told that that box, there is an electrical box that needs to be raised, and that Rob Dalton with the White River has looked at it. So that would be someone that knows what needs to be done to get the box up.
I had a concern, as I brought up before, and I'm all for you trying to fix this road up, but we have to, as we look, and have to extend and get, there's several things that need to be done before this takes place, is what I'm getting to. The agreement from the people for more right-of-way. After we do that, we need to look at it and see about if we put that in, if it's going to push the water out on a lower level to other structures. So those are things that we need to have Randy look at and bring back an evaluation of the whole thing.
I know the nearest home seems to be quite a ways from where that's at, but you'd have to do a study to see. I get that.
I mean, elevation-wise, I don't know if it's an outbuilding or partial home, but the elevation difference is not very much. That was a concern you brought up
before.
Last time.
I've been out there on the road 2 or 3 times.
Is it possible? I mean, I would need a surveyor to write a description for additional right-of-way along there. Is it possible to hire one to look at that and do a hydrology to see if we put this amount of fill in, where would it normally put that water?
I think we need to do that before we...
Where's the water coming from? Is it just
a natural, just a low sinkhole type area. We have another one on Church Camp Road there.
So it just holds the water there, and then could you not put some sort of culvert toward the...
Can't go anywhere.
It just fills up and it can't go anywhere.
Well, that's what it's doing now, though. It's filling up and not going anywhere.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's no place for it to go after... it's just a natural sinkhole in the contour of the land.
Right.
And there's no way to get a culvert on their property or out to get the water out of there.
Yeah, so I'm talking about build like a small bridge or something, a box culvert type.
Filling the road in and getting it up high enough to take it out of that would do it, but the culvert you would have to put in possibly would need to remain at the current flow level of the road, because as the water finds its way out, then under normal rains you would have a culvert. Otherwise, you'd constantly be full of water if you raise the culvert.
One day, why don't we go out there, all of us as a commission, we'll just post it and go out there with Randy.
That's fine. I'm just saying, instead of using fill, build a, for lack of a better term, build a small bridge.
It's 300 foot long, though.
So it wouldn't be a small bridge.
No. Anyway, we'll just go out there and look at it before we...
There's numerous...
I think we need to all go with Randy.
Right.
That way we don't have... we have a solution that we can kind of come up with out there on site instead of trying to guess what we're going to do. Because I don't have any idea. I've looked at it for 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Do you only have a local survey or engineering firm kind of look at this?
If we're going to plan on doing something with it, but what I'm thinking is we all need to go out there and look at it before we decide what we're going to do.
You mean to look at it with a local engineer?
We could. But we need to be on site.
Bounce some ideas, right?
Yeah, bounce some ideas back and forth.
Okay.
I think so.
I'll hold up.
Same thing is over on the other side of the road there on, but not as big a pool, but there on Church Camp Road.
Church Camp has got the
same
situation.
Thing. You know, you push that water with extension of the fill in there, and you're going to push it right over into that house that's down there in the bottom.
This next one, this road is called Whippoorwill Road. It's over there behind Tabor Rock Asphalt off Buena Vista. It was taken in the 80s, and as you can see at the end, there is a cul-de-sac platted. It was just never built. This road ends right at the end of a steep hill, and it's one that I need to have surveyed out and try to get this turnaround built. It's one that makes it very difficult, David's crew, to get turned around in the wintertime, and even the chip seal crew to try to get the machine down there and get turned around. They're have to use those two driveways to even get maneuvered around, and that's something we need to try to get this turnaround built. Okay.
We already have the easements and everything for this.
Well, so it's already there. I just need to have it surveyed out and find out how it lays and make sure we can keep drainage working properly. Another job is weather permits. We have a low waters slab down there on Dean Road that is undermining underneath, and that's normal for that type of low water structure. I need to go in there and put more concrete and get a better toe wall on the lower side of this and try to fix this. So when the water quits running across there, why, I need to try to get some forms put in there and get that fixed. Just giving you.
Is that the one we spent so much money on?
No, that's this is the first low water slab as you turn on Dean Road, and then just beyond that slab's where we done that road project to widen the road for the next I think half mile to three quarters of a mile.
Yeah.
And got that part fixed up. But this low water slab has always been there for several years. It's finally undermined enough that it's we've got to do something with it.
So. Yeah, already.
Two bids that we, annual bids we've got to put out is our annual sign bid and our culvert bids that we do every year. And we have those all but ready to go out. Another couple items that I would like to bid out, and I'll show you pictures of these. This excavator, this is a size excavator that I've been talking to the road supervisors, and this is something that I think will help us greatly in our road maintenance, especially with our ditch cleaning, and where we right now we're using backhoes and had to turn perpendicular to the ditch and do a lot of backward and forward, and it's hard on the surface. It's a little time consuming. It is doable that way, but this type of machine with an actual ditch cleaning bucket, which is a wider, smooth type bucket, which has power angles and different features with it, to where you could set in one lane of the road, clean the ditch, and put it in the truck without having to pull the material up into the road, into a pile or a windrow, or pick it up that way. And with a smooth bucket, not have the teeth on it, you do less damage to the ditch line itself. This is something, we got a couple options. They have a program called NIPA pricing. It's a cooperative purchasing type program. Similar, I believe, to NJPA. Buy it that way, or we can bid it out. This cooperative purchasing, basically you're buying it through Caterpillar at that cost. You spec the machine out how you want to, but it eliminates other vendors participating if you do that. You're choosing that program. Unless they're associated with that program, they have that same type, then it does give you options. The other choice is just doing a normal bid and bidding it out. So.
You already got this in your budget, figured in
yes.
Your budget?
I budgeted for this and also some other equipment that I'd like to try to replace throughout this year. So
I'll just get with Ron and see what the
vendor. You know, all the vendors have an option to sign up to NJPA or NIPA or any other cooperative, it's out there, Worcester or U.S. Communities. I told Cock Rand about this. Acting on whatever's in the best interest of the county that guides us on this type of decision, whether we know that this is a unique piece of equipment that can serve the county better, save the county a lot of money, and other vendors don't offer it, put it out the bid, see what happens. So we would have the correct specs regardless of any direction you pick. So it's up to you all.
Should be able to get cheaper if you go out for bid? Possibly?
Not necessarily, because...
it won't get any more expensive, though.
No. But, I mean, when you look at some of these state bids that we use, it's significant. Say, 99% of the time, that's why it's out there. It's like co-op's out there. Let's say legislature put that on. But
I visited with Randy about this, and I would like to go out for a bid for if we're going to be buying a couple of these things at that cost. I think it's spec it out with that particular company and put it out for bid. You guys may want to do something later on. You know, I know that other counties are using this. I talked to the commissioners. But I think for right now, with our relationships and the good bids that we've got from, you said this is Cat and John Deere and the others, I'd like to go out for bid on these.
We have had John Deere and I believe Potter and Caterpillar, throughout the last year or so, we've had them bring a similar piece of equipment like this down here and let the guys demo to get the the ins and outs of every brand that's out there. And they've also had these brought them to the snow rodeo and similar type equipment to this and have them look at it also. So we get good participation with just about all of our vendors. So one item I do need to, this one's not so much time consuming as far as needing it as quick as the double drum roller I need to go out for bid, and this is one that we use quite often on the patch crew. They use a smaller roller, easier to move around with smaller equipment, and I need to purchase another one of that for the patch crew, and that one I'd like to get out for bid and be able to have in time to get it ordered and built, delivered before patch season. So
get Ron and get that done.
Do I?
Let's get with Ron and get that done.
No, I'm awful busy now. I don't like to put it
in. He's going to get a whole lot busier.
Yeah.
The last item I got, we received a flyer in the mail, and this, I didn't make copies, but this is on hydraulic training. I'll let you gentlemen look at this. It shows it's a 3-day training course for mechanics, and it's on a pretty extensive on hydraulics testing, showing schematics and everything about hydraulics, motors, flows, relief valves, quite a variety of things. And I would like to send a couple of mechanics to that. It's in Springfield, February 9th through the 11th, which they can drive up there and attend this and come back. So there's no stay, but it is very expensive per person to go through this 3-day training. It's $1,195 a person. But I think it would help us, just about all your equipment anymore is all hydraulic operated and electric over hydraulics. So
I won't have any problem with you sending them. I just wonder about that time of the year, whenever you know, weather conditions being bad and everything right. Like that. I didn't know. Do they offer this later?
Well, it's the other location that we've got on this is located in St. Louis.
But they're in Springfield during February, is what you're saying.
Yeah, they're in Springfield in
February also.
Yeah. And the other one's in February, even in St. Louis, another. Same course, it's just two locations.
You know who you want to send?
Not exactly. I was thinking of possibly sending Adam and then one of the guys on either Buchanan Shop or like send them to some of the younger guys. Than the ones that's close to retirement, I think I don't want to send them.
We should have We should have enough mechanics to be able to, if they are gone, it doesn't scare me, I guess, I'm getting that.
Okay, it's just a concern of mine.
I mean, if we're in a full-blown blizzard or something like that, it ain't likely I'm going to be sending them. Yeah. We'll be needing them. But I'm not sure when you sign up if you can refund your money if you cancel out. I don't know how all seating's limited. I'll have to read and check on that. I've tried to work with our vendors to try to set something up with some of our local vendors to try to get some training, and it's very difficult to do. Most of the time they send them on to the factory to do it, and they would give us good advice in-house, and they've always been good anytime our mechanics can pick up the phone and ask questions or whatever, but this I think will be very helpful. We had Tom go through a course, I don't think it was quite this one, but one similar to this where he got quite a bit out of it, but it was a little bit helpful. But.
I think we probably need to visit about, we've been very fortunate to have a hydraulics person in the area where we've been sending a lot of stuff to get it repaired and stuff. I don't know whether we put that out for bid and have a sole source provider or what, because as far as I know, he's the only one that's in this area, and I think he was affected a little bit by some water problems. So,
well, we send a lot of our cylinders and whatnot down there to him. I mean, he's real good about getting them repaired and stuff that we can't do.
Getting
there
back, at the shop, getting right? Quick, and all that kind of stuff. So that's the reason I think probably see Ron Erickson, try to get this thing set up, see if we want to put it out for bid and put it out to where we can just take stuff down there and get it repaired. I thought that it's really, really quick for him to get the turnover on what we need on a hydraulic, something breaks hydraulically.
But that would be a little different than what this is. This is more so a training for our mechanics to troubleshoot problems, machines that we'd probably have to either, if he can't fix,
sound fine with it?
I'm fine with it.
I think we ought to. Yeah, go get them trained and do it locally if we can. On Springfield's pretty close. So.
Now, I've not talked to the mechanics yet about it. I want to bring it up to you guys, see if it's feasible, and then sit down and see if I have any of our guys interested in attending this. So.
That's fine.
Okay. Well, that's all I have, unless you gentlemen have any questions.
Oh, I've got a long list.
I know you would.
Actually, I do have some.
Okay.
Thelma Doyle. What's the issue with that road? Thelma Doyle Road. I guess it's off Fall Creek Road.
Thelma Doyle Road is a public road. It's never been a county road.
And did the sewer department go in and pave it whenever?
Sewer department went in there when they done sewer work in that area, and every time they go in on a road, they'll pave it regardless. But then it's done with. It's up to the public or people along there to maintain it. And that's a lot of the misconception. They think because the sewer department went in there and done sewer and paved it, that it become a county road, and it didn't.
The complaints I'm getting is, but then the sewer trucks, I think it's mainly Branson, because it's a Branson plant, goes through and tears up the road.
Right.
So, you know, the people are saying, hey, we're willing to work on it, but we're going to block it off to where they want to be able to block it off to where nobody can tear it up after they invest money to bring it back.
The other problem with the road is there's not enough right-of-way. There's no turnaround, and that was part when it was petitioned. They would need to make that available, and they weren't willing to do that, and it didn't go anywhere. So.
There's several of them that's that way, Brandon, and I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, part of it, there wasn't enough room to even do additional right-of-way. I think there was a dwelling or two that may have come into play on that particular road.
Well, it might be something that the sewer department, Branson Sewer, needs to get together and maintain it better. If they're the ones using it, I don't know. So we'll all work on that. Just letting you know, we got a lot of compliments on Tate Road.
where they did that. There's part of the, I guess part of the road would keep on getting underwater during certain times.
On Tate Road?
On Tate Road, and they put a culvert underneath.
Oh.
Landowners on both sides finally agreed to put
yeah,
in.
Yeah, we.
So I just let you know we got a lot of compliments on that. And
that
got
was
a lot
an
of,
area, I think, Big Cedar bought Porsche part of that, and previous
and
to that, we didn't have any place to run the culvert.
And then Big Cedar let us.
So.
Let us do it.
We even got that little problem.
Yep. I just let you know we got compliments on that. We got a lot of positive emails and compliments on the Nolan Road. So just want to thank you, Randy, for continuing to pursue that. And trash cleanup. I don't know if you guys saw, there's a letter to the editor talking about trash cleanup on, I think it's on some state roads, but is there any, what's been the history on those types of things?
Trash cleanup on MoDOT roads?
Well, even our roads, but...
Our roads, if people are willing to do it, we'll furnish the bags for them to do it. We'll even help them with vests so they're safe out there. People know they're out there. If they're willing to pick it up and put it as a designated location on the road, we'll come by and pick it up and take care of it. A few people take advantage. They'll come, and we keep bags at each of the shops in our office, and if they'll just let us know, we'll want to do that same thing.
And I might be, I don't mean to open up anything. I know, like, the state uses some prisoners, and Sheriff, I was going to ask you, is that anything that we can look into? If you need to answer that, go ahead.
We did at one point use inmates on it. Our problem with that is we're 99% all pretrial detainees, so they have a different rights and stuff. And if we use them, we have to have workman's comp, insurance, and everything on.
Whereas the MoDOT's able to use Department of, you know, DOC, right. And they're there, they're done.
Sentence, so it's a whole different deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just trying to think of some ways to. You know, you see those adoptive road signs.
Did you, I don't know whether this is the same one or not, but we received, there's been letters to the editor on trash pickup on one road out there, but no return telephone number, no email address or anything to try to get back in touch with these people, and criticism towards the county commission in a drastic way, but the facts are there were no way to get back in touch with the individual. I looked at it and tried to call, and even had the girls try to look up a phone number where I could get back in touch with that individual. And this thing, same thing, I think, was sent. Randy made the trash bags available and all this kind of stuff, and it was a complaint issue.
We have several residents out countywide that they'll take care of a certain area of road just pretty much on their own, and they'll come in and pick up a few bags, and every once in a while we'll see the bags at the end of the road. I'll send the guys out there to pick them up and take care of it if they're willing to do that. We've always been able or willing to do that. We also, if we get people that have to put in community service type thing, if we have roads that we get a call on, and you probably get a call on certain roads, we'll send them to that road, and that's how they'll put in some of their time, and we get a couple of things done.
How do we ask for more community service people to?
Normally, we just get they'll come to our office saying, "Hey, we've got to put in this." But the last couple that had several hours to put in, we never heard from them again. Just come and, "Hey, I got to do this," but then they never come back, brought the paperwork, or showed up. So I don't.
Maybe we need to go to some local,
someplace else to do their community work. I don't know.
But is that all done through the local probation services? The right across the street here with.
Yeah, it would be done through the courts, essentially, the community service, and then goes through the bench probation.
Through the bench probation. I mean, is the bench probation though pretty much who? I guess I can find all that out probably pretty easy.
We've had people do work at our shops, different things. I mean, Devin's had a couple over there over a period of time that need to put in so many hours community service, so we'll find them something to do, and that's one of the items we can. But we got to take them out to the road and make sure they're safe enough to do that, and then go pick them up and
It's not like it used to be. You used to be able to send kids out to pick up roads. You used to be able to do this. If you go do a stretch of road now, I guarantee you if you do a quarter or a half a mile of road, you'll have some needle or something laying in the ditch line in a package or whatever, and you can't even send a kid out with rubber gloves to pick up trash in the ditch lines. It's far more complicated than it was 10 years ago. And we have complaints about people finding that kind of stuff and us having to go try to pick it up or do something with it. So,
well, but I've also been behind, you know, commercial trash services that whenever they use the arm to dump it into their, and sometimes if the lid's backwards or whatever, it'll actually take trash out of the truck and throw it all over the road. And I've watched that happen. So I don't know if there's things that we need to communicate with the local trash, you know, the professional trash services that use those mechanical arms as opposed to people just throw it in the back of their vehicle, you know, the back of the trucks. I think that probably causes more trash issues than...
The very thing that you're talking about this morning, if you come East 76, as I come to work this morning...
Yeah, I saw that. It's pretty bad.
There's just a row there that's 150 feet or 100... just trash everywhere on the right-hand side of the road. And
yeah,
it's on state property, and it's real bad. It looks bad. It looks bad on our county. It looks bad on the... I thought about the fact that this time of the year is not as likely, but in the summertime, if you drove through there and seen that, I mean, you'd have no interest in moving to Taney County if you've seen that kind of a mess that's there. So
it's one thing for something to accidentally happen, but it's another. I mean, anyways... It gets frustrating when you see people actually clean out their vehicles, throw it in the ditch. It's like,
we've got several areas that's worse than others, and one I get a lot of complaints on is right there off 248. You turn on to Bird Road. It's not Bird Road on that end, but on that end.
On
it used to be on the 248 end, so it used to be a lot worse than the other end. And why, I don't know, but that one little... first stretch of road used to be pretty horrible.
Well, this county spends a lot of money on trash cleanup twice a year. Doesn't cost anybody to pick up alongside the roads. It's saved on... The first year I was here, it was like furniture and everything else in the ditch lines that was taken out to the transfer station. And it cost this county a lot of money to provide that service, but we also receive an economic impact of having that available to us. And so that's the main thing that we need to try to come to a solution to what you brought up this morning. And it's kind of funny that you brought it up, because it's the exact same thoughts I had whenever I came down the road this morning.
Well, that's what I think it was driving through this morning on here. Yeah.
I think it would be an ideal place for people on public assistance, employment for the state to be able to do stuff like that, so they can earn some of that.
I don't disagree, but I don't know if that we have the ability or capability.
We don't have the ability, but our legislators do.
Our legislators do.
Yeah.
You can reach them at.
And to go back to what you said, Brandon, we're the ones who get the blame for it. It's not where it lays on a MoDOT road or whatever. It's the county that gets the blame for trashy roads and all that kind of stuff. It's always called in. I sit around and hear this kind of stuff. You go in a coffee shop or something, you hear somebody talking about this. And
that's why I quit drinking coffee.
Yeah. So anyway.
Randy, how many community service folks do you get a year?
It'll vary. We don't get as many as we used to. And I don't know why.
Like I said, is that something Bench Probation Services? I can talk with that individual and see if we can't.
But, I mean, that's one thing we could have them do is some of our worst areas. But then somebody, we got to have one of our supervisors or somebody go with them. We don't let them operate any power tools. But that's one thing that...
Well, your power tools pick up trash. But what would you do? Just put a workers ahead sign, like you said, give them the flagging.
We sign the road and everything, so we try to keep them as safe as we can when they're out there.
This particular location is very dangerous. where this trash is at there.
It's on the state. Trail.
It's on the state road. It's very dangerous situation there on that road. No, there's no ditch line hardly, and it just comes right straight up off the bank. You know, people on there one step, and they're out in the traffic. Anyway.
Okay. Thanks, sir.
Thanks. Let's see. Next on the agenda, virtual management concepts update. This is Stewart Consulting.
Well, this is just to let you know that Sharon, who's been taking care of our mascot, is no longer going to be with us. She's retiring. So I'm going to let her talk and introduce them.
Come on up.
We put in Mass 90 in 1997, so been about here long time. And with Dawn, she was here before that, so she's been here all day. But yes, I have decided that it was time for me, so I am going to retire. What we have done is, this is Darren Stewart of Stewart Consulting, Inc.
All right.
His office is located in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And the reason I chose Darren is because I met him in February of 1991. We went to our first training together. He from one office and me from another in California. So since then, he went out on his own, and I went out on my own. And we have stayed in touch, and we have done some more things back and forth together. So I know he treats clients like we want to treat it, which is take good care of them and keep them running. But since I'm changing, we have done the paperwork. What we have to do with Sage. Sage requires that you have a reseller of record, is what they call it, so that way somebody is certified in the software that you're dealing with. They do not sell it direct to an end user. So consequently, we have taken and transferred all of our clients over to Darren's account with Sage, so that way they can continue to get support, the same software maintenance, the same thing from Sage that they get through us now. He has a larger staff than we do. We think that that's going to be a good thing for our clients. He's got 13 employees. So they're a master developer. They can actually do program add-ons for the software. What that means is that two programmers on staff, two implementation people, a couple of consulting people, a couple of support people, and one for customer care. So consequently, we feel like this is a good match for our clients, and he takes care of the Sage software as the BizNet software, which is an add-on for your financial report writer. He's got clients that already have that, like we do, so we have rolled that to him, and as of December 31st, the piece with Sage was done. As of January 31st, because we know that's a busy time for our clients, but we both have been staying supporting them, and then as of February 1, I will no longer be supporting them. Darren's office will, and they already have all the office numbers that they can call for meeting assistance, etc.
I only got one question. It doesn't. Sure. Does this have to be bid in any type of situation that when there is a change of companies, basically, does it have to go through a bid process?
Currently, are we not a sole source? Are you guys not a sole source provider?
I know we may be, but I'm saying with the change of a company, I don't know.
I say I would get with Frank and with Ron.
And
just get all that straightened out, and that way we know what.
And their rates will stay the same. Our rates are until the end of 2016.
And you say the end of 2027?
No, and there's nothing wrong with your hearing. January 31st will be my last day.
Mr. Finley, do you have something you want to say?
I'm at the end. I'm kind of excited that he's got people on staff. Well, first, he is that. I have some comments for that. Excited about that. As far as bidding this, the software itself might need to be bid. The maintenance is a professional service, and it wouldn't be bid. It could be put out to as a what they call it when doing professional services, but it wouldn't be a bid process.
All I want to do is just cover cover everything, and
I think it would be covered in this situation real quickly. We're continuing the contract that we had, and that is good idea.
And you're going to get your biznet fixed up then, right?
Oh, I think I've got it fixed right now. Until I mess it up again, I won't be calling there.
Appreciate your dedication to the county. If you've been here since 1997, then you've covered a lot of tracks that people that have been in here. So I appreciate your being with the county. And I know whenever there's a major problem, your name's mentioned, we consider it solved. So appreciate it. Thank you.
We appreciate hearing that. And I tell you what, we have really appreciated working with the county all these years. You have some excellent staff people. That we work with office holders, et cetera, and everybody's on the side to resolve whatever the issue is, as opposed to just trying to stir things up. And I think that's non-productive. So we've enjoyed handling this fight and working with you. But I am, like I said, not again. Their rate will be exactly the same as what our going rate is until the end of 2016. If there's any change then, he will get 30 days notice or whatever you all do at that point in time that there will be notification. So we just want to make sure that they're there for it. And the same way that they do the billing now, important human hours, et cetera, he will also offer some support plans. So it's maybe something that you may find financially beneficial to you that we don't offer. We want to do some things, and
thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you, sir.
We're putting faces with names. And the other thing we're doing is they're having a meet and greet for our clients here in Springfield this week. And then they're going to have programs every couple of months. They're going to come back to Springfield and have something that your people will be invited to, that they come and see something about the software, something that may help them, something that's coming up, et cetera. And he does this with other locations that he has, so consequently, he's coming back to Springfield to the list. So I think that'll be a big plus, too.
We've already got to take, participate in one of them, and he gave it to us, so I really enjoyed that, too. So.
And I'm a Missouri board. Missouri board by nature. I grew up around the Eldorado Springs, Stockton area. So,
all right.
And the webinar that they attended, they did it free for our clients for the shoot. So we already have some perks. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's see, we have next on the agenda, update on damaged patrol car and equipment.
Good morning.
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 As you recall, back in November, we had a patrol car that burned at a residence here. We had a structure fire. The patrol car was sitting by the structure, and it burnt. The insurance, we're still dealing with them some. They have paid for the vehicle. We received $22,296 for the vehicle itself. We're working on the contents of the vehicle. We received a partial on contents of $1,764 from the insurance. And we are still submitting some other stuff with the insurance company on that. The replacement of the vehicle estimate will be, with the extended warranty and everything, will be somewhere around $28,000. Replacement of the contents is estimated to be around $11,250. I would like to go ahead and bid this vehicle in with the other bids that we have coming up for the budget vehicles that we've got budgeted, if that would be all right with you all, to get this vehicle replaced and get that all in the process. And I would like to go ahead and start ordering the radios and all that, because that takes some time to get all of that through and get all the paperwork with the state to get that all up and running.
That's fine. Is there, what's the hold up and the difference on that contents? Because that's quite a bit of...
Yeah, there's quite a bit of difference. The radio, I don't think it had been submitted yet because we was waiting on prices on it. And I know there's a handheld radio that hasn't been submitted. There's, and that actually, the handheld wasn't included in this right here. I wasn't aware of it not being submitted yet. So it'd be an additional, I'll have to get the price on it.
So handheld was, what, $4,000 or $5,000?
They're going to be...
$6,000, whatever it was through Motorola.
I'm thinking probably around $5,500 or so. I may be able, and I don't know. The one that I got for the deputy here in the courthouse, I was able to get, they was new radios, but they was used as standbys for the Ferguson incident, so I'm being able to buy them at half price. So that's been saving us a lot of money on them. So they're still new, still have full new factory warranties and everything, so if they still have some of those, I can get one of them. I guess what I'm asking now would be to be able to go ahead and just proceed forward with the bid procedures and stuff on this vehicle and to replace the contents of it.
Is the new state bids not out for this year?
The new state bids are, but...
We tend to get them a little cheaper, don't we?
Yeah, going local.
And then, obviously, you still have the opportunity to go through, if we don't like it.
We still have opportunity to go state bid, yes.
Okay.
But, yeah, in the verbiage with Ron, I would put... however many or more,
or
that
more.
Yeah, because we've run into that with the in the past with Road and Bridge, and we've been able to.
Yeah, we've last couple of years we've been putting that
okay.
in all of our verbiage on our vehicles, so we can continue through the year with the bid.
Right.
I'm fine with it. You're asking for a.
I'm fine with it. Go ahead and start with Ron.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Dylan.
Thank you.
I don't think there needs to be a vote on that because it's involved. It's contained within the budget process that we approved. Right? We don't need to vote on it for him to go ahead.
But of course, this isn't in
we'll
my.
Vote whenever, I say we'll vote whenever we.
Comes through.
Do the biz, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It comes through accounts payable. Is that what you're thinking, Brandon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that or whenever he actually brings it, whenever we award it.
I guess we'll go into recess. We'll meet back upstairs at 11 for executive session.